Boy, does that take you back? It certainly takes me back. That's Young and Holt from 1968 with their big hit back then, Soulful Strut. Of course, it has had several interpretations or reinterpretations, but this is the original. The interpretations were going under the name Am I the Same Girl? Beautiful interpretations too, but this is the real thing. This is the original of 1968. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And yes, it's Free Your Mind Friday today. I said yesterday was Free Your Mind Friday. I probably had way too many jujubes or something. I don't know, but today is Free Your Mind Friday, of course. This is where we meet, we talk to each other, we have opinions to share, we have issues to take on, and the number is 888-874-4888. Try, please, to be as concise as you can so that we can accommodate more calls. Ma'at, you are the first to call in. You're on the air.
Yes. Greetings to the beloved PRN family.
Thank you.
Okay. I didn't even hear you say free your mind. I've been listening and not so much calling in, but I want to comment on the Chicago situation, which you've recently featured. First of all, I heard I have to deal with the context of it because I heard a program on Free Speech TV, and it was a sister, I can't recall her name, but an activist sister who's following the situation in Chicago. And when she talked about a couple things, and in particular, she talked about the fact that all the resources go to the police department, and I think somebody on your air had brought that out some time ago. You know, 50 schools have been shut down, and so there is something in the background where you shut down 50 schools, yet at the same time, and schools a lot of times have after school programs and recreational areas, so the community is with all the resources going to Chicago police, without infrastructure, if you will. Now, in terms of how the community, and of course in Psych 1 you learn frustration, and particularly a higher frustration level does breed aggression. But at the same time, we as a community we saw this coming, you know, for some time. So you're right, we also have to deal with it. And that's one of the things that we don't seem to be doing, because there should be some piece of the educational system that's coming from us. I remember at one point we used to do rites of passage, and I never hear anything about that anymore. And, well, that's basically the points that I want to make. When one of us goes awry or is off, you know, is getting off any kind of a straightish path, there's nothing to support us. So, you know, I was suggesting regarding another situation of having elders and people who are well placed in the community having some way where a circle, if you will, where they could help to offlay these kind of situations, and that doesn't exist at all.
Well, we'll see what people think of your ideas. Thanks for offering them.
Thank you.
Harvey from Berkeley, you're on your air.
Hello, wonderful Eutrice.
Hey, Harvey. How are you doing?
Very good, thank you. I'd like to talk about President Trump's incompetence as well as his lack of intelligence when it comes to America's fossil fuel energy catastrophe And as you know, he's repeatedly said that climate change isn't real. He wants to increase drilling and fracking for oil and methane, especially offshore drilling, as well as opening up America's national and state parks to oil and gas development, all while doing everything he can to slow our nation's move toward renewable energy, which would help to slow the dramatic heating up of our planet, creating out-of-control forest fires that we're experiencing here in California as well as other Western states. And he also seems to be ignorant about the deadly combination of climate destabilization and ocean level rise brought on by our over-the-top use of fossil fuels that will flood and devastate many of his own real estate holdings in the U.S. and abroad. For example, Trump owns two seaside golf courses in Scotland, as well as his waterfront Palm Beach estate, Mar-a-Lago, plus nine of his Trump hotels are located on coastal areas. Why, oh why, would President Trump put his own real estate empire in harm's way by demanding an increase in America's use of fossil fuels that will destroy the very source of his family's wealth that took a couple generations to build? So my question is, how's President Trump going to protect us and our nation when he doesn't seem to be mentally capable of protecting his own financial interests?
Thank you. We'll see what people think about what you've just offered. Thank you so much. Ashby from New York.
Good afternoon, you trees.
Hello.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Peace and blessings to you and good health. I met you when you came in February. I'm an old member of the WLIB when you were doing the Talk Back program.
Okay.
All right. What I wanted to relate to what my aunt was saying, but you have given some very pertinent statements about our situation. On Wednesday when I listened to you. The problem with our situation as a people of color is that we are at fault for the devastation that happened in our community. I know you were talking about the devastation that happened in Chicago with all the killings going on, but I see us as a people responsible for all of that because we didn't do our job as parents, those of us who may have children. We didn't pass on any sense of values, any sense of self-love, any sense of loving community, respect for our community. We've handed over ourselves to the system, as you said. We gave ourselves over to the system that had planned to annihilate us, and we have followed through on the prophecy that has come true. I agree with you wholeheartedly, because that prophecy was that, I think it's the 1772 William Lynch letter. And we are following through right as it was predicted, and you spelled that out on Wednesday before you left the air. I don't know why anybody didn't pick up on it. And the other thing I just wish to throw in real quickly, you also spelled out on Monday when you were talking about what is that law in Florida? Stand Your Ground. I think that's
Stand Your Ground. Yes.
Yeah, the Stand Your Ground law. Well, you spelled that one out too. You said the law was developed to give a lot of latitude to certain people and constrain the rights of others. That's crystal clear. I don't know why we don't get it. Yeah. So have a good weekend. I'm out of here.
Thank you, Ashby, for calling in and contributing today. Thanks so much. Jay from New York. What have you to say, Jay?
Yes, good afternoon, Utrice. How are you feeling? I hope well.
Oh. Yes, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. Listen, I'm just in total amazement with this announcement by Vice President Spence on a Space Force. I mean, what is wrong with these people? I mean, you're now trying to get to the point to where as you want to go and claim outer space and conquer outer space and what? Move the people that are the supporters of Trump and Pence up to outer space with all of the issues and problems that we have in this country. You're now going to spend trillions of dollars to do what? Create a space army or some other type nonsense? And we, as the American public, just go along with this foolishness. When are we ever going to wake up? It's just
what do you mean?
It's absolutely mad.
Wake up to what? This isn't Mike Spence's program. This is his boss's program. And his boss is ready to militarize space. Because, of course, we've been doing such a great job here on Earth.
On Earth. You know, I mean, it's just how do we as a country even allow this narrative to be put forward by someone who was a draft dodger? More or less, nobody's really talking about his Russian-style and China military walk that's going to happen in Washington. It's just getting to the point.
Don't you get the sense, though, that this is, at least at this stage, I mean, they may have this in mind, but at this stage, the greater use of this narrative, as you call it, is to distract people. We get distracted and we go off on these various tangents because they're sitting in some pretty hot seats right now. And they have no way of easily getting out of them with this probe, the Mueller probe investigation.
But Utrice, even with the probe and what going on with Mueller, it's still not going to change anything. Nothing is going to happen that's going to take that man out of the White House. I mean, we have to just stop playing this game to think that.
Well, here's the thing. We've been served yet another notice that we better get our act together. Worry less about them.
Right.
Because where they're going and what they have in mind. Worry more about ourselves.
But think about this. Think about this, Utrice. Look at the narrative that they're using to make this so-called election in November bigger than what it actually is. And here it is, black folks are just basically going along with it. And what are they getting in return? It's like you're giving your vote away in hopes that maybe if you gain some control, they will get this clown out of the White House, which they won't. And then things are going to change for you. And you got people, you know, in a city of Brooklyn where you once lived, beating up on old black women. And then the sickness is the black people are still going in there and patronizing these people after they done beat up on your grandmother. It reminds me of what the slave master did to our ancestors. If you put it in its perspective, it's no different. The slave master beat you and you still go and take care of business for the slave master. I mean, why would any black person, honestly, ever go into a Korean nail salon and get their nails done where there's black people that can do it? It's our mental sickness, and it basically goes to form with everything. Imagine somebody beating you, Utrice, and then months later or weeks later, your nieces or your nephews would go into that store. It's no way in heaven, based on how you was raised as a family and the type of person that you are. I know. And your community would allow that to happen, or would you ever go back in to another Korean store?
Well, these are the issues of self-worth and self-esteem and also of a political consciousness that we constantly have to raise. This is part of the work. People will continue to do these things that are not necessarily in their interests, but you constantly have to point out the contradictions so that people begin to stop for a minute and say, well, you know, that kind of makes sense. Let me rethink what I'm doing here. Thank you so much for calling in today, Jay. Lincoln from New York, you're on the air.
Hey, Keith, how are you?
Okay, how are you?
I'm persevering through the aridities of life. I want to pick up on yesterday and the violence in black in our neighborhood. There's also some other things I'd like to talk about, but I'll pick up on that. I want to bring to our attention, we speak about the violence in Chicago. The violence is not just in Chicago. Look, I was born in Jamaica. Jamaica is worse. The black-on-black killing is worse in Jamaica than it is in Chicago. Trinidad, where you were born, the black-on-black killing has increased exponentially. Throughout communities in Nigeria and certain African countries, the black-on-black crime have increased.
Well, let's put some context here. It is the nature of this particular kind of crime that people tend to kill other people just like them. So this is not an extraordinary phenomenon. This is the nature, generally. This is the statistical analysis of murder, is that people tend to kill people they know. People tend to kill people just like them. So move on.
The black on, I was pointing that out to show you something, and it's this particular violence is unique, and why I brought that up is to show you this. It was not always so. The black on black crime, the extent to which it is in all these communities, actually took birth just around the late 70s. It started especially when the CIA brought crack cocaine into California to support the Nicaraguan war and flooded the black neighborhood. And it also continued when many of the black, many of the factories and the car plants, etc., were closing down, which used to support this, what you call the so-called middle-class black family. It also, when many of the schools start going into charter and stop doing having trades like mechanic work, etc., when many children could leave high schools with a trade. And it started with the destruction of the black family. I know a particular community in the Bronx around Marion Avenue. That was a beautiful neighborhood. And when crack cocaine came in, that neighborhood became completely scarred. And that neighborhood, I used to go there and party when I was a young man, when I was a teenager in my early, like, from 18 to 20. And there was no gun violence there. So what I'm saying this to say, you know, I was glad that you addressed the issue, but we have to approach it like a disease and say, what's the cause of this? And then if we don't
But that is
like
not
that,
the cause, and this is where I will challenge you.
When I say we all, I'm talking about we.
People in the previous generation would tell you, or previous generations also had issues with murder occurring in their communities. And then it wasn't crack. It was probably alcohol. It was probably the numbers trade. It was probably the underground economy. But we have had a long history. Let's not get into deciding arbitrarily without studying the facts and looking at the figures how a particular phenomenon arose. We could say, what caused Asians, Chinese in particular. We could say the same thing. Crack invaded the Chinese community. But when we look at the opium wars, you see that blows that argument right out of the way. In every generation, we can find any number of causes. What we should be more interested in, the causes of why do people kill each other? There are all kinds of causes. But again, as I said, murder, the crime of murder tends to occur between and among people of the same group. They don't go outside to kill anybody. They kill in their own group. They kill people they know. And we have to find out how is it that we can fix this, because it is now a concatenation of a whole bunch of different factors working in concert with each other to produces lethal result. The killing of black Chicagoans, of other black Chicagoans, is not as simple as, well, it was murder. No, there's a lot of, we understand that. There are a lot of factors involved. But that does not excuse us from the duty of trying to figure out, you know, given the understanding that we have about this particular kind of crime. It's been documented. There are figures, facts about the murder rate, who is committing murders, all kinds of aspects, how old they tend to be, how educated they tend to be. We have enough of that to work with. What is the solution? That's what I'm interested in. What do we work with as a solution?
Okay. There are many. And the bottom line is education. And when I say education, I'm not talking about getting a bachelor's degree or a master's or a PhD. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about an education system to develop people's civility and sensibility. And it's an education system which should take a different approach. You should not be just teaching people to make money. Because when you put people in a mindset that money is the answer to life, then we make them, we create a survival of the fittest mentality in people. And so a big part of the problem is even we or those who call themselves the so-called educated people. Look at the like these mega churches. They are doing the same thing to people, like the so-called gangsters and the pimps who come through the neighborhood in their flashy cars and make young boys think that, okay, this is the thing I should aspire for. And likewise, these pimp preachers do the same thing. Look at things like multiple marketing, where people, even black people, even so-called black people who will join a conversation like we are having now, and they will get into a multiple marketing scheme which they know is crooked, but all they're thinking of is making money. Look at something like Coca-Cola.
But you're veering off from the subject. Here's the issue I want you to concentrate on. What is the answer? Don't tell us what the problem is and how it came about. We are well-versed in that. I think we have a handle on many of the factors involved. I'm interested in solutions. What do you propose as a solution? Just give me one.
Part of the answer is we have to treat this like we treat a mental institution. If someone is deranged and out of control, you will restrain that person, but you do not restrain that person with the intent to harm. You restrain that person with the intent to calm them down, and then you're going to put them in a program that will be corrective. Likewise,
but here's the question. Here's the problem. The person that you have just described would probably willingly participate in such a program, and it's a logical program, except you're dealing with murderers. These are not regular, normal people. These are killers. These are drug addicts and drug dealers. These are people who have brought our communities to a level we haven't seen by their conduct and by their actions. These are killers. Let's bear that in mind. We're not talking about people who, you know, have gone astray and can easily be led back to, you know, some kind of level-headed thinking. These are serious criminals. I want the answer to that. Who is going to bring them back into the fold? And should they be? Should they not be cast out? That rehabilitation is not for us to do. Rehabilitation is also for them to do. Rehabilitate yourself.
And the reason why
They're not the young.
The reason why I made the analogy with
let's wrap up because we have a lot of people wanting to talk.
Yeah, look, the reason why I'm the mental institution, I'm suggesting that this applies to the so-called murderers, because when people are doing wanton killings like that, it must be because of some mental derailment.
No. It doesn't have to be about mental anything. It is that guy has my money. I'm going to get it. I'm tired of waiting. Today is his day. I'm going to take him out. That's what you're dealing with.
You, Chief, let me just make one last point. And I'll say it like this. I was trying not to say this. I know personally of several murderers, okay? There's one guy in particular. He was in prison for about 17 years. And he and I became friends. He is an artist. And this guy was a murderer. And so happened that, you know, he changed in prison and they let him out. All right, he was paroled. And when we speak, this man who was a cold-blooded murderer is no more a cold-blooded murderer. And I know a couple other people. So it's
What is the price and what is the cost to the community when one individual decides that being a murderer is what he wants to do? And we have to live with it. You talk
to the
mothers and fathers of people who've been shot and killed and maimed for life, and you get different person. I am not, let me tell you this frankly. I used to work, volunteer in the prison system. And I enjoyed the work because the people that I was dealing with really wanted to change. They were not murderers, but they did commit, many of them, very serious crimes. I found that to be rewarding because I could see the interest. The officers that were assigned to them would actually come and pick up the newspaper and distribute it, and that's what we would use as a study guide. All well and good. But I know that it's only a tiny minority compared to the population overall who have no reason to be among us. Not them, and perhaps not even their families, because their families create another set of problems. But we keep giving them a lot of slack, and we blame the system. No, you got up in the morning, you put on your clothes, and you decided that your task for the day is to kill somebody. There ought to be some repercussions around that. I have no mercy about that. You are breaking down our communities, setting the wrong example, taking an extraordinary toll on our communities, and we have to do something. We got to get you. You ought to go. You ought to get out. We should not want you in our midst, and we should not coddle these people. They are hard-hearted, and we have to develop some hard reactions. Yes, I understand that people do sometimes. They end up being charged with murder. They didn't intend to kill somebody, but it happened. I understand all of that. But we have newer and newer generations choosing to live in a way that is anathema, totally contrary to the welfare of the community in general. We have to find a way to get them out.
Look at somebody like Tookie.
Yeah, but Tookie, we have to move on, Lincoln. We have a lot of people on the line. You can say what you need to say quickly.
Okay, one last thing. I make an analogy between these murderers and this government who kills people by the millions. I see them, those murderers, as no different than the millions of people who were killed in Iraq. And I think that the licensed murderers, like the politicians, are equally bad. And I think that we should stop selectively.
Yeah, but you're making a false. That's a false narrative, and you know it. It's a false construct, and you know it. I'm talking about people who have willfully created all kinds of pain and death in our community, and that's their intention. They didn't go to serve any place, but every day they do a disservice to our communities because they have no intention of being productive and going the right way. They are an embarrassment, and we ought to shame them. We should not have to live with them in our midst.
Just one quick last word. I won't keep you longer.
No, we gotta go. Thank you for calling in, though. Henry from Chicago, you're on the air.
Hey, Utrice, how's it going?
Okay, how's by you?
All right, we're hanging in there. But I wanted to, hopefully everybody in the PRN listening audiences will have a great weekend as well as you, Utrice.
Thank you. Same to you.
All right. I wanted to continue on what you were talking about with Lincoln, because I wanted to talk about that. You brought some really good points in regards to violence within Black neighborhoods, and particularly Chicago, and the criminal element that we have to face. Now, I kind of theoretically disagree with you on these people in regards to why they are the way they are. But here's the thing. I do agree that there has to be something done about them. But the problem is that we have a paradox here that how do we get rid of them without some sort of violent mean? Because these people are not going to go away from our community just because we ask them to. So for one, you know, we can't rely on the police because they won't do anything about it. And secondly, we can't outright murder them because that's murder. So the question I'm standing is, okay, how do we get rid of them? I mean, you know, that's the question you've been asking. But, you know, with people that look at these problems on the surface, the only way you're going to get rid of them is through violent means, because they're violent people.
Well, not necessarily. There may be a way to engage them and let them know how embarrassed the community is that they're living there. They're not contributing anything meaningful to the community. They're useless to the community. They're not cleaning up, helping to clean up. They're not doing what LeBron James did and building a school. Of course, we know that people may not be able to do it at that scale, but they are contributing nothing, nothing good to our communities, except death. We've had enough of that.
And that's understandable. But when growing up, we had a couple of crack houses on our next block, and many people have called the police, and they've done nothing about it. So
yes,
how does the community deal with that when law enforcement, in some respects, In the situation that I'm referring to, are getting paid to keep these crack houses open? How do you deal with that?
Well, you have a mechanism called a city council. They're in charge of funding the police department. They're in charge of firing the police commissioner. They're in charge of setting goals and objectives. That's their job. I don't recall any time in recent memory that the city councils of these cities that are experiencing these atrociously high murder rates have actually done their job. I don't recall that they've ever fired a police commissioner or fired a mayor. They're the authorities. They're the ones with the power. That's not the police commissioner or the local captain or the officer on the beat. It's the city council. They are the funding mechanism. You can't do the job as a police officer. You get fired. You get serious about this. Our communities deserve the benefits of their tax dollars. And you tell me which member of the city council in Chicago that you recall taking such a stand.
I can't tell you.
And that's
the problem. Like, okay, so we can't go to the city council. Who do we go to next?
The city council is, look, New York City has the largest number of people of color in its city council. And at precisely at the time, they, at least theoretically, have this much more power than they ever had. They're getting nothing done. If I had my way, the police commissioner would be fired. I would have open hearings with regard to whether the mayor of the city remains in office. We do open hearings on the performance of the police department. But they're not doing that. Their attitude is, well, you get what you get and be thankful. No. The reason you have power is to use it. And we have conditions that in some parts of our cities are like war zones. By the time 7 o'clock comes, you have to be inside and everything locked up. And you know that's not an exaggeration.
No, it's not.
So this is what I'm talking about. Why must we suffer? Why must we suffer this indignity? And you have a city council that is given the power to do these things. It has the power to call these things into action. And the people have the power to press the button on these folks in the city council and in Congress and in the state legislature. But we're not doing that. We're waiting for somebody to have the good heart, and that's not going to happen. To have the good heart to fix things for us, not going to happen.
Yeah, especially from they're waiting for somebody from outside of our community to.
There is so much money being made on the deaths of people in these communities. The drug trade continues briskly. You'd be surprised at the hundreds of millions of dollars that these communities generate. Not one penny is going toward buying a broom to sweep the streets or to assure that children in school have lunch. That's not what these communities are for. The communities exist to be preyed upon. That's all they're there for. Everybody has some kind of an angle, some kind of a thing that they do to extract the money, and then even their lives. We got to stop it. We have to stop it. Thanks, Henry, for your call. And have a great weekend. Ali from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, Idris. How are you doing?
Okay. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. I just wanted to comment about Chicago. But before that, I will have to say this to you about the city council. I'm not sure if you're aware that the people in northern Manhattan, in the Inwood section, they have fought so hard not to get the area rezoned. And I will tell you, the person who sold that rezoning, it was a person of color, a Dominican that he's sitting in the city council. He sold his own people out. And what is going to happen? That area in Inwood has a lot of businesses owned by Dominicans. That area is going to be completely cleaned up of these people. I don't know where these people are going to go, because they just approve of that rezoning. I was there on Friday supporting the occupation for overnight, and I will tell you, it's a very sad story. Very sad, because you're always talking about that people need to have their own community and provide their own businesses. And every time that you said that, I think about what is happening, that these people, they have been able to have those businesses. You're talking about restaurants, beauty parlor, supermarkets. These people, they own, and they have been able to support themselves. And this is what is going on here. So anytime that you're talking about a city council that is predominantly people of color, and they vote against the people of color, you're killing the neighborhood, and you don't do anything for your own people.
People shouldn't stop at elections. When you have enough proof that you've been sold out, you have to let the entire community know. And you have to call these people out and shame them. Because one of the things that they benefit from is the silence. What you're saying now is what everybody in the community needs to know. Who sold them out? What is going to be the consequence of that? What is the loss to the neighborhood because one individual or two individuals decided to sell out? And who are they selling out to? They need to be shamed as well. You see, we dropped the ball. We dropped the ball. This is a process that must be ongoing. You have to put these people in check. They cannot be trusted. We're seeing at every single level in the United States corruption. But it happens that for a particular term of office, they happen to be there. So in as much as they are there, and in as much as they're misbehaving, everybody ought to know. Everybody ought to know.
Yeah. I just wanted to say something real quick, because I know you have more people, about Chicago. Utrees, one thing that I always think about it is how those arms, the firearms, they get to the neighborhood. Yet it is true that a lot of the people you would like to get rid of in those neighborhoods, but those are the same people that actually almost young people, they look after, because of the injustice that the system commit against people of color. I'm not defending them, but listen, this is just one story that everybody should go into the internet and look it up. Last night, I looked it up because I heard it on another radio station. There is the police department with the FBI, I believe, in Chicago. About 7 days ago, they took a bay truck, filled it up with sneakers and merchandise. They took that truck. You could even see that on the video. I watched two videos. One of the videos is 7 minutes. The other one is about 50-something minutes. On that 50-something minutes, you could just take a look at the beginning and the end. And there is a young man saying to the cops, instead of doing this thing, set it up. So
you are committing the crime. How about taking all that money that the system is spending on you to get people to go to the truck? So all that money should be spent on the people in the neighborhood. They took the truck. They had it in one section where they just arrested one. And you see all these cops. Then they took the truck to another area. This man who actually was live streaming this into another section, a black section of Chicago. So to see who will go, and the person driving the truck was a cop that they set up, and the another car, they just left the truck. Another cop came, stopped the truck. They are supposedly arrested the driver. But then, because he didn't go their way, the same guy who was driving the truck, a policeman, in a civilian clothes, of course, came to pick up the truck. This is how these people, the police, the law enforcement, are committing crime in those areas. It's almost like an incentive for people to commit crime.
Because, you know, in the end, they have to present figures to the federal government that they're doing a great job. And that is reflected in the number of arrests made and the quality of arrests made. I am hoping, I'm not giving up hope here, I am hoping that the people who are on the wrong side, not just of the law, but of the community, I am hoping somebody within that group could understand what they're doing and make a strong effort to bring this to the attention of their group members and begin to let people know they're hurting our community and we can't have it, and give them the chance to do something about it, or understand that they leave the community no chance, no options, but to do the cleanup work themselves. Nobody wants that. But when you have more than 370 people killed so far this year, if that is not a crisis, I don't know what is. 370 families hurt. Do we really need this to escalate? Do we not see how devastating this trend is going to be if it continues? So we have to get people involved, and we have to act like we understand this to be a crisis for us. Thanks, Ali, for your call today. Well, do we have a tiny bit of time. David, you're on the air, and it's going to be short.
Discussion, and I can't guarantee that I have the magic answer, but I have a couple things in mind, and I'll talk about them quickly. First of all, the whole community ought to be at a stage where we see that this drug war is enemy thing of directed at us. So we need to encourage our legislative people at all levels to end this drug war, to decriminalize the situation with drugs, and do that. That's number one. Number two, we ought to demand that people be guaranteed a job. If it's convenient, in New York, for example, someone can be locked up in Rikers Island and they pay over $100,000 a year to keep them there, or a state prison, maybe a little less, rather than spending the money on jail and prison, on jobs. And we got to lean on these legislative people at all levels to do that. And the third thing, I'm going as fast as I can, we need to take charge of our quote-unquote education, take charge of our schools, of our public schools, and have some influence on the curriculum in terms of what is taught in the schools. So quickly, those are the three things that I have been thinking about, even though I can't guarantee you that everything will work. And those people who violate things like going around murdering folks and whatnot, we're going to handle them very harshly. So that's the way I look at it.
Well, thank you. And that brings us to the end of our program today. I am so glad, I'm so pleased that we are talking about it, because nobody else is. They're talking about it from the point of view of pathology. We're talking about it from the point of view of what is to be done, what can be done to turn this around, because we're killing ourselves, and that should constitute a crisis. We don't care whether people think it's a crisis or not. We care that we think it is a crisis, and therefore we have to mobilize against it in one way or another. We have to find a way to bring this rate of self-annihilation down. Thanks so much for contributing, and thank you so much for listening. And I thank you for making such a strong effort consistently to give us things that we can further develop in our minds and go and research and think more about, because this is how progress is arrived at. When people spark a thought or an idea, and it comes through dialogue. Thank you so much. Have yourselves a great and productive weekend, a happy weekend with people who are positive around you. Stay tuned. Coming up, Dr. Jack Rasmus. You want to stay close to the radio and listen to some more good stuff. We'll see each other on Monday. Bye-bye.